Hi, and welcome to episode 57 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me to cross the streams in the name of independent comics this week are writer, artist and creator of the kick-ass superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man... He's very quiet, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the mic not being too close to my mouth.
Oh, well, yeah.
Get it closer to your mouth.
And you can hear him there. It's the man whose comic room is second only in size to his shrine to Steven Seagal. It's Tony Esmond.
I'd love to meet him one day, wouldn't you?
I think that would probably be one of your biggest disappointments of your life. I do honestly...
Shut your mouth.
No, you know they say never meet your idols.
Yeah. It's happened to me three times. Once I got let down. Yeah. So there's always that chance, isn't there? I met you and Dan.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. both letdowns.
Yep.
I said I met Seagal when, well, I didn't meet him.
You went today.
Yeah, sort of a gig.
That's cool.
Blown away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But right now, Steve Seagal is in that wonderful sort of element of, you know, he's the majestic. He will always be perfect because you'll never meet him.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose so.
Yeah.
Okay.
I sent you that tweet, didn't I, of Steven Seagal? Someone said to him, "What are you up to now, Steven?" He was like, "I'm getting on the plane."
Yeah, like that. It's a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I tried tweeting at him, but I think the problem was my picture is actually of him with his thumbs up. And I think maybe he thought I was taking a piss.
Either that or it confuses him, because he thinks he's talking to himself.
Yeah, it's like that time I met my twin, and I didn't know which one I was.
Oh, dear. Our guest this week is probably thinking, what the hell have I let myself in for? And... That person is a colourist who's worked for the likes of Image Comics, Top Cow and IDW. And not only has he weaved his colour magic for the likes of Judge Dredd, Hack Slash, Glitterbomb and Postal, which we'll be talking about a little bit, he's also made a name for himself with a YouTube series of fantastic colouring tutorials. I know, Dan, you've mentioned them a few times in the past, haven't you?
Yeah,
one of our first shows, isn't it?
Yeah, so add that to the fact that he has a comprehensive course teaching you how to colour your comics, make them look even better. It was a no-brainer that we had to have him on the show. So, with that in mind, it's our pleasure to welcome K. Michael Russell to the show. Hello.
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 Hello. Right.
Nice to see you guys. Nice to talk to you guys. I'm the one that talks funny.
No.
Is Australia that's... hot at the moment, or is it?
Australia. Don't confuse our listeners or our guest, Tony. You've done it before, and you will do it again, anyway.
No, glad to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, really good.
Yes. We'll be talking shop and finding out more about the world of colouring and the brilliant books that... It's Michael, isn't it? I'm going to call you Michael this time on the show.
Yes, but, yes. Yeah. I use the K because my first name is Kurt. And Kurt Russell is really bad on the SEO. Try to search for Kurt Russell and finding me is really, really difficult. So blame mom and dad for that. And so, K. Michael Russell's easier to Google.
In fact... Vince Googles Kurt Russell most afternoons, don't
you,
Vince?
I do. So yeah. I don't want to blame your mum and dad. I want to high-five them, because what a brilliant name to call their son.
Well, what's bad is they didn't know who he was. They really had no idea, see, when I was born. So,
you divorce your parents now, can't you?
I know. I was kind of hoping he would retire quietly, you know, and then this YouTube, like, iPad generation, like, I wouldn't hear the jokes the rest of my life.
Oh,
no, of course, he's in the Tarantino movie, and he's in the new Guardians of the Galaxy, and I love him as an actor quite a bit, but
yeah.
I've heard all the jokes, though. If you make an original joke, I will send you guys $100.
Please, Michael, do not test them, because they will try.
Oh, I know. Everybody does. Everybody thinks there's the original, too, so...
Oh, dear. So we'll be talking shop and find out more about the colouring, etc. soon enough. But before all of that brilliant stuff, we're going to talk about some books we've been reading, aren't we, Tony?
Yeah.
You're always first, so go. And I know you've been looking forward to talking about this book.
Oh, this is the big one, isn't it? This is the triumphant one that we've been waiting for.
Here we go, folks. Get ready. Come on.
Yeah, I'm going to lead into it a bit. Let's do a little quiz. You're included, Michael. Okay, right. This is a company. This comic comes from a company that ran between... 1974 and 1975. Okay, can you guess what it is yet?
Yeah, there is it down.
That's a bit of an unfortunate phrase, isn't it? It was run by former Marvel publisher Martin Goodman. It was designed to compete with DC and Marvel. They published only 23 comics, and 5 comics magazines. In fact, and then they also had a porn magazine called Swank, which ran for a few more years after that. Don't know where they got that word from.
Is that 23 like individual, or is it like series?
Yeah, no, individual issues. Yeah.
Right.
Some of the people who worked there were Neil Adams, Steve Ditko, Russ Heath, John Severin, Alex Toth, Howard Chaykin, Rich Buckler, Wally Wood, and a couple of others who I'm going to talk about in the comic I'm going to spotlight.
So a lot of unknown artists then.
Yeah. A
bunch of nobodies.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah.
Bloke, you know, there's aiming high to take on DC.
Yeah. That was a big deal at the time, I think. Yeah. Two comics that finished. One became Dominic Fortune. And the other one of the other characters joined the Defenders as a character called Demon Slayer and was renamed as Demon Slayer. No guesses?
No, I have no idea.
Okay. Right, you're brilliant actors, because I told you the name before we started.
I wouldn't have got that anyway.
Right, okay, I said, oh, pretend you don't know. I didn't say pretend you don't know for the whole time. You meant to guess.
Is it Atlas Comics, Danny?
Oh, mate, well done.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. It was Atlas Comics. They basically had comics that played on all the sort of popular genres at the time. So they had a couple of superhero issues. They had barbarians, monsters. They had actually only one kung fu issue. And they had a vampire story, a science fiction story, pulp, and the sort of police. But they managed to get all this sort of cracking talent in. Some of their comics were The Brute, The Cougar, The Destructor, which featured Wally Wood and Steve Ditko, which is particularly good. Hands of the Dragon, which was their sort of Master of Kung Fu one-issue sort of attempt at a Master of Kung Fu series. Mm. Planet of Vampires, which is based on the Amiga Man, which is just... I think they tried to get the Amiga Man, the movie, you know, the Charlton Heston one.
Yeah.
And they failed because they obviously couldn't be bothered to pay any money. They've got a cracking superhero character called Tiger Man, which I posted some pictures on Twitter the other day about. Target Manstalker, which is not a phone app that is on Vince's phone.
Oh, God. Yeah, go on.
And my favourite, and the one that I've been talking about for ages, is Police Action featuring Lomax NYPD, the best comic ever made, yes. Obviously.
I must say, I've never seen any of this before you brought it up, Tony. I've never had, but when you started sending through panels and pages of it, it looks like one of the greatest comics.
I think God bless them at this. They didn't give two fucks about what is now known as political correctness. They also didn't give a fuck about upsetting anyone, to be fair, I think. But you have to remember that I looked it up to see what TV detectives were on television at the time, and you had the Rockford Files, which is, you know, it's very like this, Matt Helm, Shaft, which was I didn't realise was a short-lived TV series. You had Perry Mason, Petrocelli, you had Kolchak the Night Stalker as well, and you had Cannon. And over in the UK, we had The Sweeney, we had Callan, and we had stuff like Randall and Hopkirk Deceased and stuff like that.
Did Kojak come later then? Stuff like Kojak, was that later?
I'm not sure. I think maybe a year later. To be fair, it didn't come up in the Google search I did, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was around that time. You know, so it was sort of real sort of brutal sort of cop stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And cops are the sort of detectives and private investigators were very hot on TV and would remain so for sort of the next 15 years up until sort of the end of Magnum and, you know, all that sort of thing, you know, Vegas. And so it's Police Action, but it had two stories. It had Lomax NYPD and another phone app on Vince's phone, Luke Malone Manhunter, which was the other story on it.
Oh, dear. I've just got to get myself ready for like the abuse this episode. Yeah. I'm just going to let you go, Tony. You go.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. I think that's all the little gags I've written about you so far. If I find another one, I'll let you know. Thanks. But it was a real sort of Dirty Harry kind of guy. He was always sort of shooting people. I think I sent you to a panel which was a guy sort of running away and he shoots him in the back and he falls in the river. But whilst he's doing it, he's sort of thinking to himself, oh, I haven't been this worried since that widow tried to marry me.
Yeah, you know, sort of, it's unbelievable.
Sort of. Yeah, just things going on.
Imagine if someone put that in the comic nowadays, they'd get killed. So yeah. They'd be hunted down.
It was it back then. Do you remember people used to shoot people for running away? Do you remember? They didn't sort of chase them, did they? Just used to shoot
no
them.
No warning, just fire.
Yeah, even as a kid, I used to think, well, he's only running away. Yeah.
There's a scene in Beverly Hills Cop 2 when the bad guys at the end of the film just run away, and one of them the one of the good guys is chasing after him, just like jacking shells into like their back with a shotgun. I was like, I'm sure you can't do that.
It was the first issue was written by Russ Jones, who was he wrote for Creepy magazine, but he wrote it under the name Jack Younger.
Okay.
Interestingly, he also wrote a movie called The House That Dripped Blood. You've seen that?
Yeah.
A horror movie. Yeah. Hmm. It's the first issue is much more violent, and they had a little bit of various aspects of the series change because they sort of had a issue two rethink. Because the book, obviously issue one wasn't particularly selling well. I don't think many of them sold that well, actually. And they brought in Gary Friedrich, the Ghost Rider writer, and he took up from issue, he did issue two and three. He only ran three issues. Mike Sikowski and Al McWilliams, they drew the story as if it was some kind of sort of newspaper strip. You know, it's got that sort of element of sort of pulpy, noirish thing, you know, sort of 70s noir. Very violent, very cool, but it plays on every fucking glorious 1970s, you know, cliche you can think of. He's a sort of bullish, sort of, you know, sports coat wearing detective, you know. I would say if you're going to get someone to play him in the films at the time, it would probably be someone like Jack Palance or someone like that, maybe.
Yeah.
He's always eating hot dogs. He shoots guns whilst eating hot dogs twice, and there's only 30 pages of this comic.
You got time for those pen pushes down at City Hall?
Yes,
that kind of stuff.
Definitely not. And he's always rubbing up wrong with the, you know, the sort of the man and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Is Jack Palance alive? Can we bring him in for this TV show? Because I would want
to get him out of retirement. Yeah, both for the character and Jack Palance, I think would work to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Is he still alive,
Jack Palance? I don't know, actually. I'm not sure. He died in Hawk the Slayer, didn't he? So I don't know.
And in City Slickers.
Oh, did he? Yeah, he was curly. He was curly.
Yeah. I can't believe we're onto City Slickers within the first 15 minutes of this.
He's been dead for 10 years, by the way.
I can't believe you stole my thunder. I was just about to say that.
And Helen Slater is in City Slickers, isn't she? And I often use that phrase, I'd like to use her ass as a hat, which I think they say in that.
I thought that was a family film.
Well, okay, that's all right back then. You could say that then, couldn't you?
Yeah.
We're a family show.
Yeah.
The other thing that Lomax does is, as a sort of typical 1970s cop, he just sort of basically hits on all the women he saves, which it's kind of cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Very James Bond.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I've saved your life. Let's go out for dinner, darling. You owe me one. It's almost a bit like that, really.
You owe me. Oh, blimey.
I think the whole thing with Atlas is there were, I've written down here, neither tasteful or lasting, which I think is not coincidence.
So basically they just dive-bombed. They didn't do well at all.
Yeah, they basically hit every genre with every crazy idea that came their way. They had a sort of weird, they tried to have a little go at the create-your-own thing. Didn't quite work, and so a couple of the artists just took their characters off to Marvel and used them, like I mentioned earlier. But they paid really well, apparently, and which is the reason they managed to nickel this great talent for these sort of three or four issues. Some stories only lasted one issue, you know.
You get kind of comics that kind of they in comics that I find is an industry that goes from characters and properties to creative teams. I think you're in a creative team kind of thing now, but I wonder if at the time what period that was in. Do you know what I mean? Because when you went, like Image Comics, it was like, right, we've got all these creators and people would go for the creators as opposed to the characters they're making. So I wonder at the same time when they said, right, we've got these creators banging out these comics, the fans would have been into that or...
Yeah.
It was
Tell this at the period, at the time, I don't know if you know this, but Marvel would occasionally put out an issue that have a reprint in it.
I didn't know.
So it'd have a different cover, but it'd have a reprint in it. You'd occasionally pick it up and think, oh, I've read this before. And so because they knew this, Atlas, obviously having a dig at Marvel, they've written Atlas Comics all new, no reprint, along the banner. You know, you'd have trouble because there's only been two issues, you know. the other story is Luke Malone, Manhunter, which is actually really good and written by Mike and drawn by Mike Ploog. And it's a real sort of dark... sort of a cop becomes depressed and becomes a private investigator and it all goes wrong for him. But beautifully, it's Mike Ploog on art with Frank Springer on inks, which absolutely looks gorgeous. You know, really good stuff. I think if you're going to go to a comic convention or a comic mart or whatever you're going to go to, you'll be able to pick them up. I wouldn't pay more than £2 or £3 an issue, which is amazing. You think, I always often think this about comics, that we're picking up items that are sort of 40 or 50 years old for very cheaply, aren't we?
Yeah.
You know, and they're beautiful things. And these are really, a sort of little capture of the times. As I say, there's only 23 issues, so you can pick up, you could basically pick up all the output of Atlas, you know, quite cheaply. It's very fun. It's completely wrong in many ways, but it's a little snapshot of the period, and for that reason, quite fun. So there you go. Go out and buy Lomax NYPD in back issue bins. That's my one.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, so it's amazing you can pick up those comics, like you said, 40, 50 years old, and it's like they've come off the presses a couple of weeks ago. Some of the condition they kept in, it's just fantastic.
Yeah, and still readable, you know, still really good fun to read, you know. There's a book they do called The Brute, which is clearly a bit of a sort of Hulk knockoff, and the art in that is just lovely, you know, really good stuff. Yeah, very good. There you go.
Awesome.
That's my one.
Amazing. I think a lot of people are going to be checking that out now.
Cool.
I know I certainly will. Just to see their long arm of the law shoot people in the back.
Yes, they run away.
Yeah. Dan, what about you? Jaywalking.
Jaywalking, motherfucker. Right.
Cool, he really got in the character then, didn't he?
That was a little dream world there. Yeah.
My comic is Ness. I backed the Kickstarter, and that was delivered this week, which is absolutely fantastic. They absolutely cracked it. I've kind of scoured the website and the Kickstarter looking to see where you'd be able to purchase this online. But I think, as Chris Welsh is very much a kind of Congoer, he's all over the shop, so you're more likely to just pick it up at the table. And presumably when he has printed copies, you're advertised where to get it online. But the Ness, the synopsis, it tells the story of Kat and her friends as they visit the lock to scatter the ashes of her late mother. However, they just so happen to arrive the morning after the lock's final protector is killed by one of the many beasts he and his small tribe have been warding off. He was the last member of the local cult dedicated to keeping the monsters in check, and with him and his kind now gone, things that lurk in the deep dark waters and hide in the surrounding hills are free to run riot. It's a really cracking comic. I mean, you get the setup with a young bunch of teenagers, kind of early 20s, turning up the Loch Ness, and it all starts going wrong and off. And as with Chris's other work, he did War and Dot Dino. You get the kind of the war influence of the Lovecraftian kind of elements, and you see the monster in issue one is very much like a Shuggoth, kind of like a mound of kind of protoplasm and hungry sort of feeding mouths. The artwork is done by Robert Carey, and it's coloured by D. Cunniff. Again, they complement each other really well. I think it says that D's worked on The Wicked and Divine, and worked for a ton of publishers. You can certainly see that in how well it is.
It's very professional looking. Job. Yeah, the whole thing's very professional looking, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, it is one of those things I would have no problem picking up, and it had like an IDW image kind of logo at the top. It's really well done. And it's lest we forget, it's lettered by Rob Jones of Madius.
Okay.
In the back, there's some absolutely fantastic pin-ups. One of them, all of them are great, but one of them stands head and shoulders above the rest, and that's by Gavin Mitchell.
Oh, nice.
Who does the Troll Tooth Wars. Yeah, it's absolutely great. It's kind of like you might have seen it because it was used in a lot of promo imagery for the comic, of like a kind of skull with like feathers and all kind of weird stuff kind of sprouting out behind it. But it's well rendered.
They actually used it in the inside cover as well, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's really well done. And obviously you've got Small Press legend Dean Beatty provides like a pin-up as well for that. That's great.
Small Press legend.
He's very busy these days, isn't he?
Yeah, he's doing pretty well. I mean, that's 2 weeks in a row now we've had books on that he's provided artwork for. He did Bubble 07, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course he did, yeah. Yeah, of course he did. Yeah. That was good, yeah. Nice one.
So what else you got in there? There's pin-ups by Ian Laurie, Rachel Smith, obviously we know from The Rabbit, and Amar Al Chalabi, who does artwork for War.
War.
Nice. I'm glad Rachel's done that. It's a bit of a different crowd than she normally hangs about with. That's good. Yeah. That's a nice little bit of reaching out by them, I think. Yeah.
I think that's really kind of, you get a bit of crossover, and for artists, you kind of get to flex your muscles a little bit, because this is not kind of stuff maybe you would work on. And
yeah.
you get the opportunity, it's like, why not?
Yeah.
Give it a go. See how it goes. But yeah, it's an absolutely fantastic comic. There's lots of setup, a very creepy tone throughout, and I look forward to seeing how it plays out. So presumably Kickstarter for issue two around the corner.
Yeah, this was a very successful sort of Kickstarter for issue one, wasn't it? And I can imagine, you know, with the quality of this book, I can see issue two following suit.
Is it an ongoing, or is it like a mini? Do we know yet? Or
I think it's one of four, issue run.
One of four. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sensible, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's going to read very much like a really good sort of video sort of horror movie. You know, you put in Saturday night, have some beers, and just watch like big monsters. Just start chewing people.
Like laser blast or something like that.
Let's not talk about your video collection, Tony, because we'll be here all night. Like Dull Man and the like.
Yeah.
Dull Man versus...
Don't set him off.
Demonic puppets. Toys. Demonic toys, that's it. Yeah,
yeah, classic. Have you seen that, Michael? Have you seen any Dull Man movies, Michael?
I'm afraid I haven't.
Okay. You lucky, lucky man.
To look forward to.
Dull Man, yeah.
Don't say it like that. It's good.
Spell it for me.
He's like a kind of a cop on an alien world, and he goes through a portal to Earth to chase a kind of a villain.
Yeah,
and when he turns up,
because that's what happens.
He's like 13 inches tall.
Is that what he is?
Sound like that, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Dull Man. For anyone who wants to search and then suddenly realise why they searched, such a stupid thing. Although there's a lot of people probably like really having a go at me now as they're listening to this show, but I don't care.
All three of the fans of the movie.
Yeah. Two of them are on this show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's me. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to find out more about Ness.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia now. I'm looking it up.
Oh, no.
I'm catching up.
Oh, no. It's a guest that we're going to corrupt because he'll Google everything
back.
We talk about.
Right, guest.
I think if you go on the Kickstarter and you search for Ness, you can see the quality of the stuff that's on there. Yeah. Very, very good book. I actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'll be having a pin-up in issue two.
Oh, will you? Yeah. You?
Me too.
Yeah.
Oh, rumour has it. Yeah.
You'll be on issue three, Tony. Come on.
Yeah. You know, people just laugh at my art.
Or they think it's an actual book. Sorry about that, folks, last week.
We'll talk about those. I've got those ready. Okay.
Yeah.
Talk about it later.
Yes. My pick for this week was one we got sent through by Julie Nick, who's a female artist from Dublin. I first came across work in my book of last year, my trade of last year, with Girls Like You.
Okay.
And she sent through like an original book that she sent through. It's 24 pages, black and white, and it's Julie Nick's pulp stories. It's two stories, no words in it. It's all sequential. It's just two action, very pulpy World War II action style stories of like females like fighting bad guys in the war. The first one is Fighting Time, where there's this train just trundling along the tracks, and there's a bomb on there. The driver is dead or unconscious, and this woman has to jump on, deal with the bad guys, get rid of the bomb, you know, has to stop it getting to its destination. And it's really, that story is brilliantly told. It's lots of, it doesn't follow a set sort of structure, like 9-panel grid or anything. She's really mixed it up with, you know, there's one page that's got quite a few panels, like the different shapes and sizes, but they still have a rhythm to it. You know, if I'm looking at it now, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, there's about 12 sort of panels. They're like little boxes, you know.
Okay.
Some of them are just a focus on a fist or a shoe, but it kind of, you know, it gives you that real element. You know exactly, you don't lose track of the story. And it's this woman taking on these bad guys and sort of managing to knock the train off the tracks. And yeah, it's all black and white. It's really dynamic stuff. Finishes on a really nice splash page. That I was a big fan of. And the second story is more about a sort of a female sort of pulpy hero that looks a little more like Biggles or something. She looks like a sort of fighter pilot kind of thing. That's in a story. That's in a story called Running Start, where she breaks into this building, you know, being chased by the bad guys, taking them on, and then dealing with them. Big explosion. You know, it's that real sort of old school pulpy sort of action with strong sort of female heroes. Now, Julie said she did this book. She just wanted to do something different that would really sort of stretch what she does in her artwork. And I think if she's doing that, you know, she can keep doing that as far as I'm concerned, because there's a real... You can see someone testing themselves but at the same time, the story isn't losing because of it. It's not someone experimenting for the sake of experimenting. The story is still the main thing. And
Keeping it tight.
Exactly. Yeah, you never lose track of what it is. And I think, because I think it's great when people experiment, but you know, you're telling stories at the end of the day. No matter how pretty or avant-garde you want to make it, people have still got to be able to read these things and actually know what they're reading. Does that make sense? She's also got some back matter where you actually see like the scripts of the pages, which I think is quite interesting for a book that has no dialogue in it. To see like the scripts, like, you know, just the simple sort of paragraphs of what the page is going to be, 1 to 6 panels, and how she's written that out for herself. That's fascinating, I think. Because normally when you see, like, I don't know how many times have you read sort of script pages in the back of like trade paperbacks and stuff. Do you ever check those?
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah.
Occasionally, yeah. It depends who's written it, but I do, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've never seen one for one that doesn't have any words. Have you? I mean, normally it is...
I told you I saw that one that from Mark Miller that just said, 3 pages, go mad, fight scene.
Yeah, that could be one of many Mark Millers. So
how is it a script if it was a blank page?
How do you mean?
Do you know what I mean? You said
it just had no words on the page.
Just had no words on the page.
No dialogue, right?
There's no dialogue. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. I should have been clear, Dan. I didn't realise I'd lose you so soon. there's no dialogue, but... You know, you can see how she structured it for herself. I guess I wouldn't necessarily do that. I wouldn't think to do that for myself. But I think it's quite a good idea. I think I might do that.
I'm a big fan of like not having talking in action.
Yeah.
Because Spider-Man jumping through the air and then like he's saying like 2,000 sentences.
Now Spider-Man's a funny one because one of the things about Spider-Man, he's constantly talking even when he's fighting.
Yeah.
So I think
I can understand. I'm not hating, but like for me, with
it sounds like you're hating. Sometimes there is
he is one of the he is one of the worst offenders though when it comes to like being midair in a kick delivering a soliloquy in like one frame.
Yeah.
I mean, I do see a lot of that in smaller press comics when they do superheroes. They have that kind of they try and do the Spider-Man kind of thing, and it never really works as well with Spidey. Like, do you know what I mean? Spidey's got it down as a character. I can take that, but when
it's a character trait with him, isn't it?
Yeah, but when someone else tries it, like that kind of smart mouth and stuff, it never really sits too well with me.
I seem to find it a lot in some like independent stuff when people are firing guns. You know, if they're in a firefight, I wouldn't necessarily think about having a big conversation while I'm in a firefight because you kind of want to be concentrating on what you're doing.
Yeah, or doing sex.
You don't talk non-stop during sex.
Yeah. I put on like a French accent, you know, pretend I'm cat burglar.
Do you sound like the guy from the film True Lies?
So that role playing went well until the hotel moved your wife to a different room.
The travelling salesman didn't mind too much. I think he liked the accent. I think it was fine.
Oh dear, the whole switching the lights off really did you in that night, didn't it?
That bit in Nathan Barley where he's sort of singing to her, is it? And she goes, "Nah, you got to stop." Nah.
Yeah, just totally kills it.
Oh dear! From Nathan Barley back to this pulp stories. Although I love Nathan Barley, this second story, Running Start, has a really nice sort of double page spread at one point where she's laid out a building. It's almost like a cutaway sort of view, but from an angle. It's not a side view, it's like a 3D sort of perspective. And on one side it says the start, and you see the hero running through the building and like dodging bad guys, you know. So it's one scene, but you're seeing this person sort of sneak through this whole building. It's really well done, actually. It reminds me of something that you find in some kind of video game or something like that, which is quite nice. But there's also the sketches in the back of like her page layouts and characters. It's just really great stuff, you know. And there's a nice, at the back of the book it says it's dedicated to the brave women who fought for the Allies in World War II, which I think is quite nice.
Okay.
Yeah. So I know Julie, I don't know how many books she's put out by herself, but I know you can get this at Dublin Comic Con. I'm not sure, have we missed that or is that coming soon?
I'm not sure.
But she'll
have missed it, haven't we?
If we have, that'd be a shame. But if not, then you can check it out at julienickart.com. You can follow her on Twitter, julienickart. She's got a Tumblr, julienick.tumblr.com. And if you go on her Twitter, you know, you'll see examples of the work and the actual book itself.
6th and 7th of August, Dublin Comic Con.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
oh,
there okay. you go. Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. Yeah,
this weekend.
Yeah, if you're in the Dublin area, and I know there's been quite a few Irish creators that we've talked to, there's some great work coming out of Ireland at the moment, especially in the independent small press scene. So definitely check out Julie at that table. She's got a table with Rafa Lebosco, I think, who's an artist who I'm a big fan of as well. So, yeah, check them out, and we'll have to add that to the event list, won't we?
There you go. Very good.
Yeah, there you go, indeed. So.
Oh, I know what this is. You sent me this. This is really good. To realise what you're talking
don't,
about.
Don't
no.
sound so surprised.
That took me long to realise that one. What that is, yeah.
Because yeah.
I read it on my phone on the train.
Hmm.
And, yeah, really nice stuff that was. Yeah, I was really impressed with it. Great use of black and white, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's a quick read because there is no dialogue. But it's just really not. I mean, I've read it a few times just to go back and see how she's done the artwork, you know, to actually look at the artwork itself.
Yeah.
Which I think is fantastic. So, yeah, great. I think you should check it out. So, as for Michael, we're going to put the focus on you now.
Yes,
now,
I do have a book. I have a book.
Hey.
Now, you're quite a busy guy, but I'm but you may have read a comic or two in your time. I don't know. You colour comics, so I'm guessing you
quite
like the medium. What book would you like to talk about?
Well, you guys told me to come up with a book, and I am busy, and I don't read as much as I would like to, but one of my favorite, and it's a big indie, I guess, but it's a Dark Horse book that came out in, I don't know, middle 2000s by Paul Jenkins and Umberto Ramos, and it's called Revelations. I don't know if you guys have heard of it or not.
I've got that, yeah.
It's one of my favorite books. It's one of the few comics that I was able to convince my wife to read. My wife is not into the comics at all. She goes, "How much do they pay?" Okay, great. All right. So, it's called Revelations, and I don't have a 5-minute spill on this, like you That's guys. Okay. I don't have good notes, but it follows this London detective, Charlie Northern, I think is his last name. And there's this case where you've got the Vatican priest and his successor is found dead, and it's kind of a religion murder mystery thing going on. It reminds me a little bit of like a better version of like what Dan Brown does, you know, with you know, his sort of books. Kind of the tone sort of feels like that, but a little bit of like, you know, Sherlock and Luther TV. Like I could put all that together, and that's probably what you get. But it's a really cool book. It's painted, and I don't have the colorist name in front of me, but it's a the colors are fantastic. The story is fantastic. Umberto sort of penciled, I think, most. I don't know if it was ever inked, so it's got a really kind of unique look to it, though. So, but it's one of my favorite books. I think the Dark Horse put it out way back, and then about 10 years ago, and then Boom did a reprint. Maybe 2 years ago, I think. They re-serialized it, which was interesting. They did it out 6 monthly issues again. So, anyway.
Did it work better like serialized? Or, you know, did you manage to read any of those serialized ones? Or do you think it works better as a one hit?
I liked it as the one shot. When I first picked it up, it was just the trade. It was all it was 6-issue trade, I think. So, you know, that was my only experience with it.
Yeah. I mean, I must say, I'm a big fan of Ramos's work. And I always used to like Crimson's one of my favorite books.
Mm-hmm. That's one of his early ones, yeah.
Yeah, but that was one of those ones that obviously he's got a style with the characters he does, the actual physical characters. But some of the things that blew me away was the details he puts in his backgrounds and like, you know, just the surroundings. You know, he puts so much detail into it. And
it's insane. Yeah. Like as someone who that book sort of reminds me like why I stopped wanting to draw comics. It was like the cars and horses and buildings. Yeah, I didn't like drawing those things, but anyway, but yeah, you're right. The architecture, he obviously spent like a whole lot of time doing research and you know, that sort of thing. The colorist was Edgar Delgado, which I should have known that. He colors Ramos quite a bit.
Yeah.
The detailed backgrounds, like if you as a colorist saw that and think, Jesus, that's a lot of work. Flat and color.
It's actually probably more work for the flatter than it is for me. And we can talk about flatting if anybody doesn't know what that is. But definitely. It makes for the pages, you know, longer to do, but you know, it's worth it. It all serves the story. So,
yeah. Nature of the Beast.
I mean, you can see why Ramos works with like one colorist that he does over and over, because obviously they've worked up such a good working relationship. I think if anyone else saw some of those backgrounds he does, they'd just panic and break out into a sweat. Because because in Revelations, he's dealing with like cathedrals and churches and like basilicas, and there's just massive, you know, the detail in that. If you just go to the building in general, you know, there's a million things that you'll never notice in the detail, and he puts it all on the page, doesn't he?
Yeah, and it's never like, you know, you read Spider-Man, it's like the monolithic, like, rectangular building, you know, like with glass on the front, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's everything is minarets and like you said, it's insane. A lot of detail. Beautiful book.
It's one of those books I think gets overlooked as well. I mean, I picked it up, like, I think it was a bargain. I was at a convention. I saw it, and I remember seeing it in previews back in the day. And because I thought, I remember seeing that somewhere. And look, open it up, it just blows your mind how beautiful that book is. And it's got a good story to go with it. So, you know, there's a lot of people that may not know about that book, and I highly suggest picking it up. Yeah, very good.
Very cool.
And you probably get it cheap on Amazon these days, I would imagine.
Probably so,
You can have for 13 quid on Amazon. Just looked.
Well, ignore me then. It's not that cheap.
That's pretty cheap.
It is in England at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our comics just went up by a quarter again.
Oh.
Michael. Yeah, due to Brexit. Thanks, guys.
But before we get bogged down with the depressing politics, let's keep it up, and let's talk about some comics that you've worked. Don't put me off, Tony. Now, Michael, you've colour a lot of books. And before we talk about the colouring courses, etc., there's a lot of budding colourists out there listening to this show. But before we get to that, you know, are there any books that you're working on at the moment that you'd like to talk about?
Sure. There's three right now that are in various stages of completion, but Postal has been running at Image for a while. It's on number 13, just came out last week, and that was the first issue of that I colored. They've had the same colorist for a while. I took over the number 13, and so that was a little nerve-wracking. You're coming into a creative team that is very well established. They've been working together for, you know, a year. They've got 12 issues and, you know, done. And it's like, hi, I'm the new guy. Don't screw it up. It's a lot of fun. It's one of those comics where the premise, I think, throws a lot of people. It's an interesting premise. The lead character is the postmaster in this small town that was sort of created as a haven for criminals and underworld figures and all these sort of things. And the mayor is the postmaster's mother, and she sort of rules it all with an iron fist and doesn't tolerate crime, which I think is interesting and ironic within her own town. It's like, nope, no, you can do that other places, but not here. It follows her son, and it's a complex story. There's a lot happening, but it's one of those that they've sort of rebooting, but it's sort of they've created a new jumping on point here with number 13, which I know is cliche in comics. Yeah. Every month is a new good jumping on point, but they've sort of reset the series a bit and a new creative team and all that. So that started last week.
So is it a new artist as well, or is it just
the same artist? Same artist. It's Isaac Goodhart is the colorist. Bryant Edward Hill is the writer, and it's one of the first books I think Isaac's done. I think he was a Top Cow like Talent Hunt winner, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Don't quote
me on that. He's done that series all the way through, and so it's sort of our first. It's a first go around for me, but he's been there for a while.
So did you have to get, did you have to like speak, I suppose you'd have to have a conversation at quite length with the previous colorist, are you? To get, you know, colors.
As I say, do you hand over files of kind of like, of flats or palettes to use?
Yeah, not really. They sort of told me, look, like, we like what you're doing. Do your own thing here.
Okay.
You know, and so, and as a colorist, that's the best thing we could ever hear. Yeah. You know, yeah. Is, you know, because I've done, you know, some small projects before where it's like, I need you to do this exactly like this person did and don't deviate. And it's like, rare. I mean, it's just, it's very, you're not creating at that point. You know, you're just, you know, you feel like you're rubber stamping things, you know, and so when they say, hey, we love what you're doing, do that, that's the best. And so, yeah, I had a lot of freedom as far, it's a little bit more colorful, I think, than it was, but I know the color is saying that is funny, but it's the book was, it was all very, I mean, by design, you know, very kind of dark and moody and muted and those sort of things, and I wanted to keep that, but at the same time, the palette is a lot more varied, I think, now than it was before, so, but anyway, it's, but yeah, that came out last week, and it's been a lot of fun. The feedback has been good from everyone so far, and so I'm happy to hear that.
Well, nice one.
Like I said, yeah, definitely.
So, and how long are you on that book for? Or is that just it's an ongoing?
It's an ongoing. Yeah, right. And it's I don't think there should be issues going on for the foreseeable future. I haven't heard of any. Of any details as far as you know, an issue count or anything like that, but it's ongoing, and so yeah, should be going on for a while.
Okay, cool.
So you get like we mentioned earlier, you were saying about the flatters. Is this one flattered for you, or do you do the whole thing from the get go?
Yeah, and I feel like I might need to explain what flatting is in case anybody.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, please do.
So a flatter, just about every professional colorist that I know, and there are probably very few exceptions, but works with a flatter. And I've never worked without a flatter. I won't work without a flatter. But basically, when the pages come in, the first thing I do is I send it to what's called a flatter. And all they really do is they separate all the elements on the page into different colors. So, you know, your shirt's a color, your arm's a color, the back, you know, the building is a color, the windows, you know, it's just a flat color. And it can look psychedelic. The colors don't really matter. But what that allows, that's the time-consuming part of coloring a page, is separating all the little elements out. And you could see, you know, with some art these days and most comics, there are a lot of things going on every page and every panel. So, that's the time-consuming part, really, of the most time-consuming part to me of coloring a page, is separating all of those elements out. So we sort of subcontract that out to people that just do that, and they're called flatters. And so when it comes to me, you know, everything's separated already, so I can go in and easily grab, like, okay, I want to get this building and that tree all together. I can just bam, 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 bam with the magic wand, and I've got all of it, you know, and I don't have to, you know, select every little edge and every, you know, and redo it. And so it makes our jobs as colorists much faster. You know, if I had to flat every page that I also colored, I would not be able to do as much work as I'm able to do.
Are they people that you know that you sort of, they say, oh, this is the color job, and you send it out to a pal who's a flatter, or are they provided by the company?
Only once. No, they're. I don't think they're. I don't know they're ever provided by the company.
Right.
It's just kind of assumed that, you know, you're going to color it. They don't really care how you go about doing it or who's involved. Right, okay. It's like whether you have a flatter or not, they don't really care. We're paying them, you know, ourselves. But I know I wrote, the exception to that was Glitter Bomb. Jim Zub, the writer on that, actually had the pages pre-flatted, which is just something he does, and it's fine with me. You know. Yeah. So. But anyway, that part's done, and then there is kind of a second level of flatters. They're considered color assistants, and those, with certain books and some colorists, you know, they'll set up basic palettes but not do any rendering and those sort of things, because the flatter doesn't really make color choices usually. They're just random neon colors is what I prefer. That way I know that it's wrong color. Remember to change this, you know. But
that's it, yeah.
So yeah, but yeah, I always work with a flatter, and most colorists that I know work with a flatter, and
Oh, nice! I didn't realize I thought the company provided them. I didn't realize a colorist would have their own
Kind of everybody's contact. Everybody's kind of got their own, and we're very secretive with them. It's kind of funny, because it's like, I have a good one. Do I tell my buddy about this that also is a colorist, or do I keep them for myself? Mm. Because they're a good one is so hard to come by. And the one that I work with, I've been very fortunate and lucky. I've found them early on some forum somewhere. They're from the Philippines. They speak very little English, honestly, but they speak enough to understand what I need. I've worked with them my entire career of about 5 years now. So.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Yeah. We've had Andy Clift, who we had on. He does quite a lot of flatting work as well. He was talking a bit about it, and I think as a colorist. I know you know how you're saying you've got a flatter who it's basically your mate, you know, and he'll work for you. Do you have artists who come to you and they think, well, I really like the color work Michael did on this page, you know, this issue? Do they come back to you over and over again, or is that an editorial dictator's who the colorist is?
I mean, most of the work that I've done is been more on the indie side, you know, with, you know, IDW, Image, Top Cow, and most of the time the exception of Postal, actually, everything else has kind of been decided by just the writer and the artist on it, you know.
Okay.
So, you know, they'll say, hey, you know, I saw your work on so-and-so, or, you know, I can trace pretty much every quote-unquote major gig that I've had back to a much smaller, you know, less glamorous gig.
Right,
you know? And that's why when I'm talking with you know, budding colorists, as you said earlier, people that are beginners and wanting to learn about it, you know, there is no job that should be considered to be too small or beneath you, or, you know, everything that I've done, I can trace back to like a 4-page backup for some trade or an anthology that was 6 pages or 8 pages and it, like Postal, for example, there was a book came out last year, the Mad Science Mixtape. It's got a long name, but it's part of it. It was an anthology, had a story written by Amy Chu, who's doing Poison Ivy, I think now. And Isaac was the artist on it. And I don't remember how, I think the editor on the book got in touch with me, knew him through Facebook or something. And, so he did this little 6 or 8 page story. And so when I guess we're looking for a new colorist for Postal, Isaac calls, you know, emails me or messages me on Facebook or something, and says, hey, you know, we're looking for a colorist for Postal. I was like, oh, you know. And the same thing with, like I did a Hack/Slash miniseries, like that started with a 4-page short written by Tim Seeley, 4 whole pages. And he emails me like a month later, do you want to do 5 issues of Hack/Slash? And it's like, sure. I didn't tell him at that point that I hadn't actually colored any full issues of anything yet. I sort of left that part out. I said, I can do that.
Yeah.
No, I think you might know now, but anyway.
Right.
You come around to kind of thinking, well, I want to be a colorist, and how did you eventually learn the skills of the trade?
Well, I've been drawing forever, like since I was born, basically. My mom said I started when I was 2 or 3, just sketching, just with crayons or whatever I get my hands on. So I've always kind of, you know, drawn and doodled and sketched, and just usually for my own entertainment as growing up. It was, and back in 2002, actually, it was a while back. I picked up a Wacom tablet, or Wacom, however you say it, and I actually, it's the one that I still use, by the way. It's 13 years old.
Cool.
People don't believe that, but yeah, I'm gonna bronze this thing when it dies. But but I found out that I bought that to sort of start messing around with digital color, and I really like that part of the process, because it doesn't take the time that drawing a page did. And I learned, like I said, I jokingly said this earlier, but I sort of meant it, that I learned pretty quick, you know, the first couple of test scripts that I thought I wanted to draw, I was like, I can't do this. I'm no good at this. I can't draw buildings. I can't draw horses. I can't draw, you know, cars. I don't like drawing things I don't want to draw. So, you know, but, because the writer, you know, he can say, you know, 1,000 men on horseback attack the ship overhead with guns and pistols. And it's like, It took you 5 seconds to type that. It's going to take me 4 days to draw this. I don't want to draw that. But but anyway, so I sort of, even back then, this was like 2003, 2004, I tried out for a few coloring, just little things I'd find on the internet and forums and, you know, paying peanuts or nothing at all. And I was terrible at it. I didn't really get coloring. I didn't understand what it really meant. I just thought, you know, stay in the lines and make it pretty, like, which is unfortunately what a lot of people still think coloring is. I said, okay, so I kind of got out of it completely for a long time, and I focused on music. I play guitar and drums and sing and everything, and did that for a little while. And then back in 2011, I don't know. I kind of got back into comics again. I was reading them again. I was like, you know what? Let me take another shot at this. And really the same thing. I started looking on forums and job boards and taking just whatever I could find, and didn't pay much, if anything, at the beginning. And but it's a pretty small community. You know, the comics industry is amazingly small. I mean, you know, in movies, you know, they talk about the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Like, yeah. I think in comics you need like 3, like, to connect everyone. I mean, right. Seriously, yeah. To connect everyone, it's probably 2 or 3. Every project, it's like, oh, I worked with this writer on so and so, or my buddy did this. I mean, everybody just everybody seems to know everyone else. So, but yeah, it's so
small world now, isn't it? I think as well.
It is, and the internet's made it even smaller. And but you know, I just started, and it kind of built it up from that, you know, where you start getting recommended for gigs here and there. And I've been fortunate enough to not have to actively search for the last couple of years.
Brilliant. Nice.
which is always a fun point to get to.
I think that speaks to reputation and professionalism going a long way, I think, because then it's paying it forward, isn't it? Like, if someone has a good experience with someone they work with, they'll talk to someone else and say, oh, you should check this guy out because he was brilliant to work with.
It really is. And especially, like I said, given the size of the industry, it's like, if you're an asshole, like, people know it, you know? Yeah. If you're good to work with, they know it. You know, if you hit your deadlines, they know it. You know, I've seen some guys that were amazingly talented that, like, couldn't hit a deadline. Didn't make it. Like, it doesn't work out. Like, or they just have a much harder go of it, you know, until they figure it out. So that's, you know, being on time and putting out solid work and, you know, being nice goes a long way. Like, so
have you found, I guess the deadlines don't shift, do they? So if an artist, this is hypothetical, but say an artist is putting out brilliant work, but it's taken them longer to do it. If you get those pages at a later date than you were supposed to get them, is the pressure then amplified because your deadline is still the same?
Yes, that's it. that's understatement. Understatement of the year.
Yeah.
Colorists and letterers, even letterers can kind of start when the inks are done. You know what I mean? So it's like with when the pages come in, it's like, yeah, the deadline doesn't really move for us. It's like, you know, we need this issue in 3 days now. Congratulations, you know. But I've been very, very fortunate to not have that problem with any of the guys that I work with.
Yeah.
I hear horror stories from – I haven't done any work for Marvel or DC yet, but I hear a lot of horror stories from people where it's like, okay, yeah, the book's late. We need this whole thing in, you know, this weekend. And it's like, yeah, you know, it's I don't see how guys do it. I couldn't do it. But that's kind of how I kind of fell into it. And
That's why I think colorists and letterists, I think those two things, I think they're definitely not enough people talk about. You know, a lot of people talk about the artist or the writer, but you know, there's these other elements of a comic book which are vitally important, and they're the unsung heroes that sometimes pull it out of the fire when it has to go to print.
I think maybe over the last 2 years, I'm going to say, colorists have got a bit more recognition. I know you're getting credited on the front of books recently, and I don't think there's any superstars in comics anymore, but there's a few names, you know, Breitweiser and Belair and you know, all these sort of people who've really sort of shot up and almost comics household names, aren't they now?
Yeah, definitely. Jordy Belair is one of my heroes. Like, she does amazing, amazing work. And the biggest ego check in the world is she started the same year I did.
All right, okay.
It's like, all right, don't get the big head. So it's like, yeah, I'm right there behind her. It's Jordy, and then people talk about me. That's kind of how this works. But no, it kind of speaks to how insanely good she is. But no, it's helped a little bit. It's not where it needs to be. The big problem is the solicitations. It's this kind of, I don't know, antiquated system where it's like, we only have so much room. We can put the writer and the artist, but And so it's not in the solicitation, which means the reviewers don't really have that information unless they get the book in their hand, you know, like, this thing, and it kind of trickle down effect. So like, the early previews may or may not have your name in it, it's one of those things that I'll never stop kind of griping about. I might run myself out of the industry griping about it, but
I think the problem with us, certainly, I mean, I noticed this week, is that some DC books have got like four artists and four inkers, so there can't be that much room on a page anymore. To put the colorists in as well, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's why you see those covers where it's just last names and there's like 40 names down the side.
Yeah, I know that today, funny enough. Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean.
But I said colorists can make a big difference because one of my favorites, Invincible, at a certain point, the colorists, they kind of they got a new guy in. And it was like a revelation. It was like, wow. It's kind of the comic, kind of the artwork went up a notch, and it was always great done by Brian Otley. But like when the new chap got on, started coloring it, I was just like, "This is absolutely fantastic." Everything was vivid and textured.
It can make or break a book. It literally can make. I mean, a good colorist can make like mediocre line art okay, like doable, and they can also ruin a good line artist's work. You know, so it can go both ways.
Sorry, mate, go on.
Gone with people that put, so there's an artwork in like a colorist has kind of done a blur or something. And I said, oh shit. I know, I don't mind blur, but kind of like, there's someone's worked really hard on that. And then,
you know, I always ask, I'm like, every now and then there'll be a scene where I'm like, you know, it'd be really cool if I like, it's like a explosion. Let me like mess up the inks a little bit and make them shaky or something and see if. And I always ask, like,
funny you should mention about getting credited on a cover. I'm flipping through the images on your Twitter, and it would appear your first cover billing was on a Judge Dredd.
It was. That was maybe 2 years ago, and there was a kind of a. They were needing the regular art team, I guess, needed a fill-in issue to sort of catch up, take a breath, you know. And because he had done a large run there, it was 20-something issues, I think, at that point. And so it's like, we're going to bring another team in for that one issue, and then he was going to pick back up. And the artist on that issue, Steve Scott, lives like 20 minutes from me. We knew each other, and he recommended me to the editor, and all of a sudden you're doing an issue of Judge Dredd sort of randomly. And believe me, I'm milking it. I'm like, hey, I'm that Judge Dredd guy. Remember me? I did that issue of Judge Dredd last year, like 2 years ago.
We call them the Toothers over here, the 2000 AD fans. It's a real sort of subculture in England, 2000 AD. You know, it's comic fans.
It is. It's very cultish. Yeah. It's kind of a very cultish thing. Like, they'll be at shows or cons or whatever, and there are those handful of, oh, you did Judge Dredd, that's so cool. Like, they're just a little bit, you know, they're into it, which is fine with me.
Believe me, if you got the colors wrong on a Judge Dredd costume, because it's quite a weirdly colored costume, isn't it?
It's so complicated. He has the most complicated costume. It's like, is this orange or blue, red? What is this little thing? Is this yellow? Like, there's a lot of little pieces to get right.
I don't think they completely understood color back in the 70s there, because he's got green boots, you know, yellow striped shoulder pads and a red helmet. You know, it's just really strange.
There's no scheme. You know, it's not like it's not complimentary or anything. It's just
of Dredd in secondary school came in, and I'd colored in like the jumpsuit blue, and like I remember several people almost physically attacking me saying it's black.
Yeah,
it's black.
Well, back in the day,
the highlights, it's blue.
Yeah, back in the day, they couldn't really print that gray, so it was like, all right, that's why Superman's hair was blue, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they couldn't really do that gray color. But
Dan killed him, it's fine.
I was going to say, to get back to your original question a long time ago, Postal was out last week. Glitter Bomb is a new series that is launching in September, which I'm very, very excited about. That's sort of my first, that's my first number one new property sort of,
is that
thing.
Jim Zub again, is it?
It is Jim Zub. Yeah. And he's, you know, Wayward and Skull Kickers.
He's a great writer.
Fun guy to work with.
He's doing a Marvel book, isn't he? He's doing Thunderbolts, I think, at the moment, isn't he?
Yep, he's doing Thunderbolts now, too. He's done some stuff for Disney with Figment, and he's sort of all over the place, working on a lot of different things. This is it's like a very hardcore horror book. Like, this is so unlike anything he's ever done. So I think stretching his legs a little bit and doing something, very different than what people are used to from him. So, but it's very gory. It's very nasty. It's it sort of follows a this actress who's moving kind of a washed up move toward the end of her career because she's 37 or something. It's like, oh, she might as well be dead. It sort of follows like that Hollywood. Story of her and how it's treated her and her trying to get back at it, and it's an interesting story that it was, every issue I would get the script and I'm like, can we get the next one? Send me the next script. What happens? Like, I'm like, but that starts in September. It runs four issues, I think, and then kind of we'll see. I think the situation there, but it's kind of a mini series though.
Glitter Bomb, It's Time to Eat the Rich for Real is the sidebar there.
I've only seen the covers, but they're beautiful looking covers. It's a very eye-catching looking series. It's one, are you a horror fan? Do you like horror?
I do, and I've sort of it's been funny because I've worked on a lot of horror stuff just sort of by accident. Like, I've got a lot of credits that are very, weird and horror and that sort of thing, which, if you know me personally, it's, you don't see me as like the big horror guy, but I've worked on a lot of it. I'm a big fan of it. And the crazy thing about Glitter Bomb is the guy that draws it, I think, just turned 22. He's a young guy. This is kind of his first big comics project, and he is insanely talented. He's just total prodigy, freak of nature.
One of those kind of guys that's inspiring and at the same time makes you sick.
And you hate him. Yeah. And you hate him. Yeah. It's like,
I haven't seen anything and I hate him.
Exactly. But he actually, he painted all the covers as well as the
really?
Line art.
Oh, amazing. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, he is unbelievably talented, and I told Jim, like, look, you better hire this guy now. We're not going to be able to afford him in 5 years, So Jabril Morissette Fan is his name, and he's from Montreal, I think. So
okay, and that's how Image, is it, Michael? Or
yeah, it's Image. I sort of had a little geek out moment at Comic-Con. I didn't go, but I was seeing Jim posted some pictures, and they had the big Image booth with the, the 8-foot tall banners, and Glitter Bomb was one of them. And I'm like, hey, that's my thing that we did, so like, that's as close as we get to our name and lights, I think, in this industry. So it's like, hey, that's that thing I'm working on.
Yeah. Cause I think I met Jim Zub when he, at New York Comic Con, when Skull Kickers had just gone crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first issue just went absolutely mental, didn't it? And they reprinted it quite a few times. But he was a really sweet guy. And he was really sort of, oh my God, I can't believe it's done this. He's like pleased. Yeah, he's a nice guy, I think, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he is. And he's a lot of fun to work with. Every issue has been fun. And it's been fantastic to work with.
Yeah. Cool. I noticed on your Twitter feed as well that you've colored a Wolverine piece by Brian Level as well. Is he you know, you work with, or
Well, we met at Heroes Con in Charlotte last year, and sort of started following him around on, you know, Twitter and Facebook then, and we kind of don't know him really well, but we've hung out a couple times, and we saw him at Heroes again this year, and so yeah, he's a friend of mine, and he posted that just I think for the fun of it, and so I said, hey, that looks like fun, let me do that.
I'd buy that book. I got to tell you, that's a great book from the looks of it. Yeah, he's great. I met Brian. I reviewed a book of his a couple of years ago. He's definitely on the rise, I think. If he stops drawing tattoos all weekend and gets back on the comics, I think we'll be fine.
That damn day job paying the bills and stuff.
Really good.
So what made you want to? I mean, obviously you rediscovered your love of comics and coloring. What made you then want to start doing like YouTube videos, which then led on to a course? How did this all start?
Well, if and any of your beginner colorists can probably, those little listening can attest to this, but there are literally thousands upon thousands of videos and websites, blog articles. Used to be, that was the only way before YouTube. It was, you know, blog posts about how to color and how to do this and all that. And the problem is, you know, there's 10 million different ways to do anything in Photoshop, and none of it really builds on itself. You know what I mean? It's not like you can watch one guy's video and then watch the next one and go, okay, well, you know, that kind of lines up. And they might have completely, entirely different methods, you know. And a lot of it, whether it was the YouTube videos or even some of the more popular books on the subject, sort of missed the forest for the trees when it comes to coloring. Like, it focuses mostly on the technical aspects, you know, what to do with your layers and the lasso and blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't talk a whole lot about the storytelling, which is really the most important thing that a colorist has to do, is tell the story. And I was even guilty of this. I've sort of, when I first started working, you know, again, I was thinking, all right, you know, I'm going to stay in the lines, going to make it look pretty, and hey, I'll use a complementary color scheme. That's cool. Like, you know, like it was just about making things look good. And coloring is more about creating focus and atmosphere and mood and all of those things that really everyone sort of, most everyone kind of skims over, you know, in the tutorials and those sort of things. And it was actually, I'll give a plug to someone else here, but Comics Experience has, they do live courses and things. And I took Chris Sotomayor's course a couple of years ago and was sort of blown away by it. All the light sort of came on, you know. And of course, he's been coloring for, I don't know, 20 years or something. So, but anyway, I was looking around on YouTube and I'm going, no one else is really doing this. The way that I think that should really be a big focus. And a lot of my earlier tutorials too were kind of the same thing. It's like, oh, this is how I do it, blah, 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 blah. But as I've gotten better and as I've grown as a colorist and sort of to, you know, learn more about it, I've sort of shifted the channel more toward those sort of things. And, getting, where do you want the reader's eye to go on the page? You know, at first glance, when you hold a book at arm's length, like, you should be able to tell, this is the most important thing in this panel, you know, or this is what I should be focused on here. And so it's minimizing what's not important and maximizing what is important. And so I created the YouTube channel and started doing that stuff on there to sort of do that. And originally thinking, you know, that would just be it. But then I realized, like, even with YouTube, just kind of the nature of it, it doesn't really lend itself to, you know, okay, and then you watch this video, and then watch this video. You know, it's more like people just kind of click randomly on whatever they find. I mean, they have playlists and things like that, but it's not quite the same as having it all together in one place. So I sort of took that, what I learned with what worked on YouTube and what didn't, and on my on the website put up a kind of one-off, you know, coloring course that's, I don't know, it's 10, 11 hours, something like that, that covers pretty much the entire process from the technical basic stuff as far as the tools to use and how everything works, all the way through, you know, the core meat of, you know, rendering and lighting and all that sort of stuff, and then into, you know, the more technical stuff and then toward the end. So I put it together as to say, okay, this is a a great start. You know, start here. For those people that were like me, that were kind of searching all over the internet trying to find the right way to do things, it's sort of like, okay, look, take this. And you know, my goal is to kind of up the quality of, you know, those people that are just starting out, and like, don't do the same things that I did, you know. That's basically almost and I'm actually doing a series on YouTube now about how not to color comics, and it's all things that I just used to do. You know, so but anyway, it sort of all came from that, and it's been going it took off in a way that I was not really ready for. It's been amazing. Last I looked, there's around 65, 70 countries have students represented in there now. So it's kind of amazing. Insane. But brilliant. Yeah. I wasn't really expecting that, but happy that it did.
So Zed, I came across them just going through YouTube. I was trying to kind of get down to the cut and grab style rendering.
Sure.
And I come across your channels and just the way you do your stuff, you're straight into the kind of the meat of it, and not kind of too much faffing around and mucking around. And the style you use is consistent. Well, the technique you use is consistent throughout, and it's very easily to follow. Whereas some videos, they just kind of blast through stuff. Like I know what you're doing, but I've only got kind of like a very small screen to see what you're doing on your small screen. And they're working obviously by keyboard shortcuts, because that's the fastest way, but they're not telling the viewer that. So it's kind of like, what are you doing? I didn't understand.
Yeah, and I'm probably guilty of that too. Like, there's been several videos where I'll find myself like halfway through, and I'm like, I've been doing this thing over here with, you know, that, you know, are people following this? Are people getting this? But I usually do try to, I try to make as much sense as possible.
You use, like, when you put an action down and you press it, and basically it isolates that element out.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So you can kind of color it, and then you kind of merge it back down. Mm-hmm. And I've got kind of a different way of doing stuff, but the way you did that kind of got other things kind of clicking in my head, thinking, oh, yeah, that's, I could adopt that the way I do it. And
thank you. And actually, early on in the course, that's one of the first things that I mentioned is, look, this is just what I'm doing. Like, this is what I think works, but it doesn't mean it's the only way. And even, you know, recently I did a video on Tamerbond Villain's method, and it's a much more Photoshop techie sort of method, using mask and adjustment layers and all these different things. Because I originally used Photoshop more, I thought about it as if it was paper, basically. You know what I mean?
Okay,
like, you know, it's just, I'm going to, you know, paint things, and I had like everything is on a layer maybe or two, and that was it, you know. I have sort of adopted some of those tricks from other people, and it's always kind of evolving. There's, and for anyone that has watched any of those, any of my videos, you know, again, it's just my way. It's just what I did that time, and mine changes, and people find things that work for them. And so there isn't a single, you know, correct way to do things.
Because,
you know,
obviously the factor is of, like, you've got a time constraint. You've got to get this done in a certain time. So, like, the idea of having actions and shortcuts and certain methods and techniques to kind of get the best process as fast as you can.
Sure,
That's high up in the priority for a comic book colorist.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're great and it takes you, you know, a day to do a page, you know, you're gonna have a bad time, you know. So definitely, there's a lot of shortcuts, tips, tricks, shortcuts, all that stuff is important.
So, say, the way I've come at it, I work as a graphic designer, so I do a lot of cover. Over the years, I've done a lot of cover makeup stuff. So the way I approached Photoshop was a lot more, as you mentioned, the technical side. So when sometimes I've gone back to stuff that I've worked on, and there's hundreds and hundreds of layers, and that's when you really realize, I've learned this mistake a long time ago, is you got to label your layers.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because sure. If you got layer 1, 2, copy 0, and you're like, well, what does that do?
As soon as you start copying your layers, you are in for a whole world of hurt if you don't name them.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
One thing that I usually try to do is, like, if I do something, can you guys still hear me? Skype is telling me that I'm logged out all of a sudden. Okay,
no, you're fine. Yeah.
We're having some thunderstorms here, so you guys hear some thunder rumbling in the background. It's, but no, with the way that I kind of do things now, if I do something on a page that's a little unorthodox or like this is a little out there, I think this is going to work, but I'm not sure. Like those sort of things, I will put on different layers so that I can quickly go, okay, they didn't like that, you know, or they did or whatever, you know. So I've learned over the years to kind of do those sort of things, but yeah, a lot of ways to do it.
Would you ever get told by a kind of an artist or the company, an editor, for instance, to kind of pare stuff back where you've kind of gone too far on stuff? Has that ever happened to you?
Not really. I mean, I'm more worried about it myself, I think, than I am the reality of what it's actually been like. But I think I've been really lucky and very fortunate to work with a lot of cool creators that we sort of all saw eye to eye on, you know, and there's always, you're going to have those, you know, that those covers that take like 6 revisions to get right or whatever. Like it's going to happen sometimes, and I don't take it personally. I mean, it's you know, sometimes you try things and it's like, hey, can we do this instead, or can we try this or whatever. But it's honestly been pretty rare for me. I've been pretty lucky to work with some people that I guess we were all on the same page as what we're looking for there, you know.
So but like for budding colorists, you've got an hour webinar on your website, which is comiccolor.com, is that correct?
Yeah, if you go to comiccolor.com, across the top there's all my portfolio and blog, and there's the webinar. It's about an hour long. That's just sort of it's kind of a good overview. You know, it's not going to make you an expert, but if you're just kind of clueless about where to start, that's probably a good place to go. And you can only do so much in an hour, but yeah, that's a good place to start. It's comiccolor.com.
Nice one. And you do a paid for course, which is a lot more in depth.
Yes, and that's Comic Color without the U that you guys throw in there, by the way.
I took it out. We didn't throw it in there.
That's true. We're like, oh, this unnecessary U. Let me get rid of this.
Such anarchists.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know.
So you also, did one of your comics turn up on the wall in a TV series? Was it an Elementary? Was that something you'd worked on?
Yes. That was funny. There was a book by, I think it's Alterna, put it out, and it's called Mother Russia, and Jeff McComsey wrote it, and it was a cover by Drew Moss and I, and, you know, I did it, and it was like 6 months down the road, Jeff messaged me, or Facebook, I think, and he had sent me a screenshot. They had sent him like an early take on this. He's like, hey, make sure you watch Elementary this week, because our cover's in it, and like, like half the cover is kind of in the frame, but I'm still taking credit for it. I'm like, yeah, that's it. That's mine. We did that. but you know, so that was super cool. Yeah, that exactly. Where the you know, waves of women and gold bullion and all that. It's like,
you need a podcast for that. I'm
still waiting on that, but. But no, stuff like that's awesome. I mean, it's a lot of fun to have stuff like that happen. That was interesting.
What would be your dream color job? Is there anything that you look at and you think, oh, I'd love to have colored that, or I'd love to color that project, or, you know, even just from a genre point of view, is there a particular genre you prefer? Or
I mean, for me, and I realize it's the cliche superhero thing, but Batman and Superman, like, I mean, that was my childhood, you know what I mean? Yeah. So if I could ever, you know, work on either one of those would be awesome. You know, X-Men's another, you know, all of the, just the classic, just to say that you did. I actually, I don't know if I should tell this story or not, but one time, you guys are like rubbing your hands together. Oh, yeah. the exclusive. But no, I'll leave all the names out of it. But I was contacted by a colorist back in, this was early, this was like 2011, 2012. I had just got started. And it was like, hey, can you help me out with this book? I'm on a deadline. You know, I'll give you a percentage of my page rate. I need some help. And I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, I'm very naive and about the whole situation. Sure, let's do it. And I was like, and then he's like, oh, it's 8 pages in 2 days. And I'm like, at that point, that sounded insane to me. Not so much now, but that's a lot of work even now. But it was like, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if I can really I don't want to commit to this if I can't do it, you know. Like, can you send me some of the art just to let me see what it looks like? Maybe it's easier or something. And it's got, like, Batman and Wonder Woman and Superman. And I'm like, what the hell? What the? Yes. Okay. Yeah, I'll do that. Like, I don't even know what this is, but yes. But it was a Justice League issue. Oh, wow. And so I ended up doing it, and I did all the pages. I didn't get any credit for it. I barely even got paid for it. But it was I learned a lesson there I guess they call that ghosting in the industry, and learned what that was. But so I have technically colored Batman. It's just that no one actually knows it.
Oh.
Anyway.
You're famous. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
I think like ghosting and there's a lot of people working behind the scenes. It happens a lot more.
Yeah, we were just talking about it, weren't we, before we started?
Yeah, there's some unsung heroes of the industry that no one will ever know working on the front line, I think. Yeah. So that's awesome. Yeah.
Exactly.
in a roundabout way, that's awesome, if that makes sense.
It is. It is. Yeah. And and by the way, while I was talking to you guys here, I have now purchased comiccolor.com with a U. So
hooray.
So for those of you that can spell it that way, that'll get you there too.
Yeah, welcome to civilization, Michael. It's good to have you.
Oh dear.
It's kind of amazing how easy this was to set up. Like I think it's already done. But yeah, go ahead.
So where can people go to find your YouTube videos and the website? Just give a reminder of where people can go for this.
Sure. It's comiccolor.com, and eventually you can have the U or without the U, but for today we'll say without the U. You can find my blog and the portfolio and links to all of my coloring course and the webinar and my credits and all that stuff and how to contact me and all that sort of thing. Comiccolor.com.
Awesome. And is that the same on YouTube? Can you just search on YouTube? Yeah, what's your channel on YouTube?
Let's see. I think there is a link on my website to it. Awesome. And you just probably have to search for K. Michael Russell, I think, on YouTube.
I shall put a link in the show notes, folks. So when you listen to this episode, you'll find all those handy links in the show notes. Yes, yep. I'm making more work for myself, as always.
And the other thing, if you just search for comic coloring tutorials on YouTube, I'm hard to avoid, I think, these days. So
that's the best way to be.
Which is good. It's sort of an accident. I don't know anything about any of that stuff, but I think I've got like 17 of the top 20 results or something is me somehow. I'm hard to find. I'm hard to avoid if you search for comic coloring tutorials on YouTube.
Awesome. Awesome. So we hope all you people out there that are budding comic colorists check this out because they're fascinating tutorials. I mean, I've yet to step into the world of coloring my own stuff yet, but Dan, you've learned a hell of a lot, haven't you?
Definitely. So. I mean, I'm not saying I know loads, but I know a fair bit, and then I've watched these and picked up loads of stuff. It's really good.
Yeah.
Like you say with Photoshop, there's so many ways of doing stuff.
Yeah.
It's so many ways of getting to the same kind of place. It's good just to learn how other people are working and see if you can pick up sort of tips and tricks with how they do their business. So,
I appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
Now, a couple of small quick questions before we ask you what events you're going to be doing. What's your least favorite thing to color? Is it like buildings, animals, whatever? What is the one thing that you think, oh no?
Least favorite things to color? Crowd shots.
Oh, good. Good choice.
I think because things like, you know, buildings that have lots of detail and things like that, a lot of times they are background, you know what I mean? So it's not like you want to spend an hour on the front, you know, face of a building or something, you know? So, I tend to keep things kind of simple for the most part with backgrounds, but crowd shots that are, even like if they're really wide and they're way out there, you can kind of fake some stuff and it doesn't really matter. But if they're close crowd shots, then, you know, there's a lot going on. Everybody is like, you know, everybody, different hair colors.
Yeah, there is. I was going to say, a lot of people, you can see they start colouring the front and then the back just becomes one block of colour, doesn't it? You know, there's almost a fine line when you begin or when you end that process.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's something too that I talk about a lot on YouTube and the course both is kind of rendering strategically. You know what I mean? It's like use your time wisely, because it's like, yeah, the guy in the foreground, spend half your time there, you know, and make sure that there's enough contrast and detail in him, so that, you know, the guy that's 50 feet away in the background, you shouldn't be coloring him the same way. You know what I mean? And that's not being lazy. That's just being, that's good storytelling. You know what I mean? Yeah. If you're doing things to draw attention to something that's in the background, then you're wasting your time.
Reader's going to start reading into why that one face is colored differently. And you're always right. Sometimes. Yeah.
Right.
That face in the crowd is going to do something, you know?
Yeah. Sure. Exactly.
Cool. Nice. Are you going to be at any conventions later this year?
I don't do a ton of cons. Let me check my schedule here real quick. The only thing I know of for certain is in like next year. So I don't know. I've got one in Pensacola, Florida, in February. Pensacon. That's I do every year. Mm. But yeah, I don't do a whole lot of shows.
You're far too busy coloring the comics, aren't you? Really?
Yeah, that's it.
Are you based out that way? Are you, Michael? Or
not far from it? Yeah, Pensacola is 2 hours away, I think. Right. From I'm in Long Beach, Mississippi, on the coast there. Okay. So, this is like the southeast U.S.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Nice. Awesome. Well, awesome. Well, follow him on Twitter, check out his YouTube videos, and just check out the courses, because it's well worth it.
Thanks, guys.
Stick with us, Michael. Prepare yourself for the tail end of this show, because it all goes wrong at this point.
It's just now starting to go wrong?
Oh, he's coming back. He's definitely going to be returning guest. What other events have we got coming up, Tony?
Got a few. The big one, our next personally... for us as a podcast, the next one is the Bristol Comics Expo, which is Saturday between the 6th of August between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. Double Tree by Hilton. I've got a room there just for the ladies, let know that.
You're going to get kicked out of that hotel by the end of the day, you know that. Yeah,
it's going to be like that scene in Borat where he just runs around the corridors naked. Oh. God. There's a couple of big events. The first and most important big event is that the release of Red Mask 3 is at that convention, isn't it, Vincent?
Yay, finally. Yeah,
it looks brilliant. Go and grab yourself a copy, because we've seen it. I'll also have to pay for one. I've got just a copy, but, you know, I'll pull it out of your dead hands. Yeah.
I'm very excited about the launch of that. I'm doing, sketch packs, and, you know, there's offers. That's awesome. For those that haven't read any of the comic, there's going to be an offer for all three issues so far, so...
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah,
and there's we've got a table. We're next to each other, and we've got a pod table next to the Red Mask table, and we'll be doing some interviews. So if you've got a book drop in, or you just fancy coming over and having a sweary conversation with us, please do, because we'll have a microphone.
Yeah, which means that there will be a special.
There might well be one there.
Yeah,
yeah. The Mighty Owen is going to be there. Who's just sent us a question? Actually, how much are you looking forward to seeing me on Saturday? We're looking forward to seeing you a lot, Emily. It's very, very nice to see you. Haven't seen you for a while.
Dan, I think we need to say something, Dan. Yes, we're looking forward to seeing you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can't help it, this is a loaded question.
She's coming after you, she's going to kill you. Yeah. Other guests at it are a couple of ex-guests. We've got Jessica Martin's going to be there. Dave Brown, who's releasing Shame and Kane issue 3, which is very good, and we talked about it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
John Late, Emily Owen, Shane Chebsey, Paul Grist, Ben Oliver, Sarah Dunkerton, and Matt Gibbs are going to be there, who are friends of the show for Improper Books, and they do Mulp together. Alan Davis has got a special Edgar Rice Burroughs print at it, a limited edition one.
I've reserved mine. I can't wait.
Have you reserved it? Have you?
I've reserved my print. Yeah, I'm going to see if I can get my old Captain Britain book signed by him as well. Do you reckon he'll mind? Nice. Do you reckon he'll mind? I've never met.
Yeah, him. I don't reckon.
No, he's a nice guy. No, I've spoken to him before. Yeah, really nice.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Attic Studios are there, and Rob Williams are going to be there, so please pop over, come say hello to us. We'll have some postcards and, I don't know, fanning around. Going
Tony,
on
Tony will have clothes on, so don't worry, folks.
I do requests.
Just don't look under the table.
It's basically, if you've ever seen the films The Hangover, it's essentially going to be a live rendition of that for a day.
No, No, it's not, because I'll be drinking on the Saturday night after the convention, not before. So it won't be like Thought Bubble.
It doesn't matter. There's going to be a tiger and someone else's baby, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. All I'm saying, four words, puppetry of the penis.
Oh,
there we
God.
Go. That's three words. On the 27th to the 28th of August, between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m, is Melksham Comic Con. MelkshamComicCon.com. Melksham Town Hall, and then over the road at the King's Arms, there's a sort of workshop party type thing going on, games room. At that, there's going to be loads of guests at it. Mike Collins, Lee Townsend, Gary Erskine, Verity Glass, and Ian Churchill. The 10th of the 8th is The Odyssey, which is Christian Ward's book, if anyone remembers it. I think it's an image book.
Yeah.
It's done a colouring book. That's all trendy now, isn't it? People do colouring books, don't they?
Yeah.
And I thought it's particularly applicable to talk about on this show because it's a load of amateur colourists.
I was doing it before it was cool. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah. So if you've got any crayons and you're one of these sort of people who sits on the train annoying me by colouring things in, then pop along to that. That's a gosh. And then on the... I'm so bitter, aren't I? The 3rd of September, Leamington Spa Comic Con, they're opening a pop-up shop at the Royal Priors Shopping Centre in Leamington Spa. So please pop along to that as well. That's very good. We also had another question in from Michael Phoenix, which deals with official organisations for furthering the unity. So, Michael, thanks for your question. We might tackle that maybe next week, I think.
I did look at that question and I thought that was so good. It requires quite a long discussion, yeah. I think.
Okay.
Bizarre for us, but we'll probably have a think about it.
I think our guest for next week could have a lot to say about that.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
Yeah, and I'll tell you who that is pretty soon. And it's
there you go.
Very exciting.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that's it for events, dude. There you go.
Do we have any shout-outs?
Yes, I've got one shout-out for a friend of the show, John Locke, get well soon. He kind of was diagnosed with a certain illness, said it found out it was a grumbling appendix.
Yeah.
So
yeah. He's been through it. The past year or so has been an absolute nightmare health-wise for him. And finally, it seems like there's light at the end of the tunnel. So it's brilliant.
If you want to kind of insight into that, listen to the first episode of, is it Morning Coffee?
Yes.
John's podcast, and he sort of details this horrible affliction he's had for like years, and suddenly it's just... It's gone
diagnosed
now.
And it's actually his appendix, yeah, which is great news. Kind of is great news for him, and we're well pleased for him, aren't we? So yeah definitely.
Yeah.
I've got a shout out. That's just I popped into Orbital on Friday just to congratulate them on their win, their eyes and the win. Richly deserved. I was chatting to Chris Thompson in there, and I suggested maybe doing Catwoman next, because that's what happens when you do. You know, you get an acting award, don't you? You just go and make a pile of shit. So I said, it's going to be the equivalent of either Snow Dogs or Catwoman. You know, one of those sort of things where you win a good award and then you go and make a movie.
Is there a comic book industry like version of the Razzies?
Yeah.
Of what, sorry?
The Razzies.
Yeah, it should be, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we could invent that next year. Let's do that.
I don't think you couldn't do that in the comic book industry, because it's such a... an area where...
Worst guest ever.
...that can get volatile. Obviously, Michael, you're not going to be nominated for worst guest because you've been brilliant.
I see the egos in the comic industry may be a bit too volatile.
Yeah,
the Razzies.
Yeah, handbags at dawn on Twitter, weren't they?
Yeah. Oh, dear. But a place where there's no handbags to be found, only superheroes, is a place to hang your cape. I'm not going to be put off by Tony this week. My segues are going to go...
Not just me. Don't blame me. Dan hates your segues.
He loves them. He loves them. And we love superheroes, and so do the guys at A Place to Hang Your Cape. If you like your TV shows, your movies, small press comics as well, they talk about... AP2HYC is the place to go. Great guys. They've got some exciting stuff coming up, actually, that they've emailed us about. Some exciting calendar sort of small press stuff that we're going to talk about if we talk about on next week. Should we do a little spotlight on it a little bit next week?
Yeah, we're still kind of in talks.
We're in talks about it. But they've got a lot of cool things for charity as well, which is brilliant. So, yeah, AP2HYC. If you read your comics digitally, then head over to pipedreamcomics.co.uk. They do a lot of focus on small press and independent comics, whether it be Comixology, Sequential, Electric Comics, everything digital they focus on. They're the people that have so far put the first review of my third issue of my comic, which is thank you guys, you said some nice things, and it made my day. So, and talking of making the day, there's a place
I love that you give this such a big build-up.
Shut up, Tony, shut up. I'm trying to get through this. And talking of making the day, there's one website that will always make your day.
Oh, fucking hell.
And it's not our website, it's downthetubes.net.
Hey.
As always, John Freeman and the gang, just they're fighting the good fight, and just amazing articles and Tony Esmond stuff.
Thank you.
What's going on at the moment, Tony, and down the chair?
There's a preview of Shaman Kane 3 just went up today. Yesterday. We've got some art from it. So bearing in mind, he'll be releasing that. Dave Bratton will be releasing that at Bristol. So pop over to Down the Tubes, have a look at it, and I'm sure you'll like it, and you can buy a copy of him. There you go.
Brilliant. Now, before we move on to the recommendations, is there any competition stuff this week? I lose track of what we're doing.
No, we've done a competition. Yeah. We've got the comic Small Press Factor to mention.
Yes. You can do it this week, Tony.
I haven't got it written down.
I know, that's why I asked you. Leamington Comic Con, they're putting on the Small Press Factor every week. We've been putting a link in the show notes for all the info you can find out about it, because I make a hash of it every week. But they're putting on a brilliant competition where you can win a place at Leamington Comic Con for your small press comic, and they're big supporters of independent comics, and like Dan and the guys, they put in such hard work.
We have a meeting of minds every so often about the really shit guests. I don't know if you have this in the States, Michael, but over here we get people crashing comic cons who are like small bit name actors in soap operas or background players in crime,
sure,
things like that. And it's a sore point for us here, and the guys at Leamington Spa giggle along with us and send me pictures just to wire me up of people who are going to be at comic conventions.
Leamington Comic Con, like a lot of the comic cons we talk about, like Melksham and Bristol and Nottingham, etc., they're comic conventions. If you want comics, go to these ones. You know, it's much like independent comics itself. You know, it pays to look for these smaller events because they're putting in brilliant work. And like Dan, they're putting together this Small Press Factor. If you've got a book, and you wanted to get it out to the public, apply for this competition. There's an entry form. You do a little video of your comics. It's going to be interesting to see what videos they get for that. And also, one of the prizes.
Kind of a prize.
Is it a prize? But you will win a guest spot on this very show.
Normally, we have to beg people.
I know. That's 1 week I don't have to worry about scheduling. But come on, Michael, it's a hell of a prize, isn't it? Come on, you've been here for a couple of hours now. You know that how good this show is.
I am getting paid, right?
Yeah. No,
so that was K. Michael Russell. He's a lovely guy. We've got to say goodbye to him now. talk to Tony after the show. He'll be able to sort it out for you.
That's it.
Right.
Yeah, so check out the link in the show notes. And check out all the links, actually. Because there's so many good ones this week, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
And speaking of awesome stuff that you need to check out, it's time for the recommendation section. Tony, do you want to kick us off?
Yep, I'm going to recommend from the Mighty Maniacs at Madius Comics and Little O Productions, the second issue of, right, is this Horare? How do you say it?
I would say horror. I wouldn't necessarily say it like that.
Yeah, you are Jason King. Oh, hang on a minute. I'm Jason King, aren't I, according to a drawing that we recently got sent in?
Yeah, yeah.
Which cool.
It's Spanish for horror, isn't it?
I don't know.
Was it Italian?
Yeah, I think it's Italian.
So it's Horrere, Horrere, issue 2. And it's come out, I think it's just about to come out from Madius. The boys sent me a preview copy of it, and I genuinely think it's one of the best things they've done, actually. There's four strips in it. The Thin Place, written by Rob Jones and Mike Sandbrook, who write a big chunk of this book. Art by Neil Ford, which is a sort of cool little graveyard ghost sort of creepy story with a little sort of commentary on modern society. Tupper, which is, I think, my favourite, actually, of it, written by Louis Roldan and art by Diego Simone. And it's got a twist on, that sort of trope in zombie horror films where they all sort of pile into a place where they're trying to sort of stay the night, find food, stay safe, not get by a zombie. Yeah. It's a little twist on that, quite a clever little twist on it. The Gilded Cage, written by Rob Jones and Mike Sandbrook again, art by Gareth Slightholme. I'll probably say this is the art that I most liked in the book. It's got that, it hits the border for me between cartoony and realistic. If this was a story in Mad magazine, I'm going to say the art would be similar. Mm. So that's kind of classic, but some cheeky stuff. Really, really good stuff. And then Grimoire, Chapter 2, A Fish Out of Water, which is the second part of an ongoing story written by Rob and Mike again, art by Alistair Wood. Absolutely supremely well laid out work. It's got a real sort of Clive Barker feel to it, for anyone who read the first issue. As I say, I think this is one of their best things they've done. And it's got a great back cover by Dean Hopkins of Frankenstein. And I'll have to get this name right, because this is the cover artist, is Roussel McEwen, who did the cover. Really lovely stuff. If you go to their Facebook page, there's at Horaire Comic on Twitter. Facebook is Horaire Comic, or Madius Comics, at Madius Comics, M-A-D-I-U-S Comics. On Twitter, you can find out in details of how to get a copy. Very good. www.horaire.zone is the website. Good stuff.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Just a quick aside, as soon as you mentioned Mad Magazine, RIP Jack Davis.
Yes. Yes. So much. Yeah.
Yeah. A big loss, but what a body of work. I think we can all agree. You know, if you just Google Jack Davis art, you will see some of the best stuff you've ever seen in your life. It's as simple as that.
He was like 92, I think, or something like that. I hate to say it, but he did have a great innings, and he was still pumping out work for, a huge chunk of his life. Really great stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, very.
26 has been pretty brutal on there. Generally celebrities, but comic world as well.
Yeah,
definitely.
So now that we've all been brought down a bit, Dan, it's up to you to bring us up again. What's your recommendation for this
week? I've had an absolutely fantastic, wacky comic been sent in to us, Adam and Gil's trivia game.
Yeah.
I was trying to find out if they're actually at the Glasgow Comic Con that you mentioned earlier, because I could have sworn one of the emails they sent over, they mentioned that, but I can't seem to find anything else. Adam Smith and Gil Hatcher, they're two of founders of Scotland's
Jill is from Glasgow, I think, in chief, or somewhere up there.
They could well be there, I guess. Yeah. I guess you had to find out and then maybe tweet it out. But they're founders of two of Scotland's longest running anthology comics, Khaki Shorts and Teen Girl Comic. And they've come together to make this Adam and Gil's trivia game comic. It's a fast-paced cavalcade of sketches jammed into 28 pages. It's got some crazy things in it. Covert ops of Rainbow's Bungle, Mozartian Mollusk, the Baroque Topus, and loads of other stuff. It's just loads and loads of comics, some of them only one page, some up to five. Each one different art styles.
The Bungle strips made me laugh out loud. The Bungle from Rainbow, just in day-to-day situations going wrong. That's just amazing.
There's one where the dog, who's like a kind of heroic dog, and he tries to fly a plane, and then they realise he can't fly a plane. It's Barkus. And then he says, I'm not going to do it. And everyone in the plane's like, hooray. And then the last shot is like, Barkus saves the day. It's just mad. But yeah, it's a really cracking comic. Well worth checking out.
I reviewed Jill Hatcher's... I think it's called The Beginner's Guide to Being Outside, I think is an Avery Hill. I think it's an Avery Hill book, or 3 or 4 years ago now. And she's got a real obsession with, not obsession, but fascination with nature. And it's a really beautiful book. Yeah. I think she does Thought Bubble most years. You'll bump into her if you go to that. I think, yeah, very good.
Cool. Well, awesome. This one I'm not sure if you can pick up a Glasgow thing, but you can definitely pick it up at comicsy.co.uk, and it's only £3. And it's well worth it.
Awesome.
Very nice.
That one was light and fluffy. My recommendation for this week is horrific.
Oh, good.
So I'm glad you lightened the tone before I brought it down. Mine's an IDW book, and it's one of my favourite IDW books, actually, one of my favourite stories. It's sort of a one-and-done story called... written by Bobby Kernow, I hope I said that right, art by Dave Wachter, letters by Chris Mowry and Sean Lee, and it is The Night of a Thousand Wolves. This is a horrific book. It's dark. It is a beautiful book. There is a death within the first five pages that will shock you. Now, I know we live in a world where, you know, you see all kinds of stuff in comics these days, but they still manage to make something shocking. And if you see Dave's work, Dave Wacht is one of my favourite artists working today, I think.
Yeah, we love his stuff, don't we?
Yeah, because he evokes such emotion, and, like, you know, there's the watercolours and the inks he puts in it, it just blows your mind. But this is the synopsis, right? And if this was a film, I read it and just thought, I want this to be a film, but at the same time, I don't think the film could be as good as the book. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In the Dark Ages, the tranquil life of Harrick Benyon and his family is shattered by unthinkable tragedy. Before they can react, the family find themselves under siege by hordes of wolves with one aim: death. Amazing, eh?
Yeah.
And when such a dramatic reading.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
I could have done it more dramatic, but I don't think anyone could cope with that at this stage of the show.
Yeah.
And it is that. It's called The Night of a Thousand Wolves, and it is literally a small sort of it's almost like a Nordic sort of Viking sort of town that is besieged by just so many different wolves and wolf creatures, and there's supernatural things going on. But like all great horror stories, it's the characters themselves are what make it work. There's tragedy, there's brutal action, there's double page spreads that will blow your mind, and at the same time, you know, I've never seen Dave Wagner do work where the guts are flying and, like, you know, blood everywhere. He does a wonderful werewolf. Anyone out there who likes werewolf books and just wolves in general, I know there's a few of you, I'm not the only one, you need to check out Night of a Thousand Wolves. Because it's, like I said, it's a one-and-done story. You can read it. I read it in one sitting when I first got it. I heard about it on comicgeekspeak.com. They spoke about it, Dave Wagner. So, and it was, if I didn't hear about it on a podcast, I probably never would have known about it, and therefore never would have discovered one of my favourite books on my shelves. So I urge you to get Night of a Thousand Wolves, because it's just amazing. And there's wonderful pin-ups and sketches. You know, seeing Dave Wagner's sketches in the back is just a work of art in itself, and, like, you see scripts and just all kinds. It's just well worth it. And IDW always put out lovely quality books anyway. So there you go. Michael, what would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners? They're hooked on every word you say. So,
yeah. Oh, sure. you caught me off guard.
It can be anything, even if it's a TV show or a movie. You know, well, we've talked about Stranger Things recently. Yeah. Someone actually thought we made up Stranger Things, but it does actually exist.
Or even a set of brush sets or something like that you might use professionally.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
You know, yeah.
Hey, that would be good. Kyle Webster, I think it's right. KyleBrush.com, makes digital brushes for Photoshop that are emulate natural media, you know, watercolor and things. I mean, Black Magic. I don't know how he does it. It's amazing. It's, but I buy everything he puts out. I just buy it. So,
Mark Lamming speaks very highly of him. He was telling us about him as well.
I know a lot of. When I heard that Dave Stewart also uses his brushes, I'm like, yeah, he's good. Yeah. He's fine. But but no, I'm a big fan of his. You can check it out at kylebrush.com, I think. And you mentioned IDW. I forgot to mention that there is one other project I have starting, I think, in November. Has the Yakuza Demon Killers. That's all you need to know.
Yeah,
Yakuza Demon Dan's Killers. I'll tell you what, you've said that title, and Dan's already bought it. Love title. Yeah.
Dan's been messed up. He's great.
It covers all the bases, Yakuza, Demon, and Killers. But,
call that Orbital tomorrow to put that on the pull list.
Yep, that's all you need to know. But it's about that. It's about Yakuza, Demon, Killers.
They put some great stuff out, IDW, aren't they?
They do, really original
stuff, yeah.
Who are you working with on that one?
Amit Chauhan is the writer, and Eli Powell is the artist. They were both Top Cow talent winners. They had, last year, 2 years ago. And it just got announced last week, a week before last, I think. So
nice. We definitely need to check this out.
Yeah. Are you doing New York this year, Michael? Or?
No, I've never done New York Comic.
Okay.
New York Comic Con, but
Tony does it every year. Yeah, Tony does it every year. So
that's the reason he doesn't do it.
Yeah. Is this the reason I'm not going now? I mean, before. Yeah. Now I'm definitely not going.
Yeah. Oh dear. No, thank you very much for coming on the show though, Michael.
Yeah, cheers, Michael. Been really good.
Thank you guys very much for having me. It's been a lot of fun, and let's do it again whenever you guys want. I'm ready.
Oh, amazing. I know the listeners, they're kind of surprised whenever we have an episode where they learn something. So, and I think they've learned an awful lot this time.
Yeah.
And colorists are bitter people. That's what they've learned today. <then. laughs>
Fit right in England. We're like that now.
Yeah.
So some stereotypes are true. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah.
Just off tipping, excuse us while we
Oh dear God, here we go. Now we hope you enjoyed this episode, folks, and learned some stuff, and let us know what you thought of it and what you thought of the books and like Michael's course. There's several different ways you can do it. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've got any new books, events, or anything you want us to give a shout out to, go to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We'll answer emails to either of those. So keep them coming in, because we've had some lovely emails and we're trying to get through them, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, thanks for that. We've got some great books coming up, actually.
Oh, God, yeah.
I'm looking at I'll keep the books I haven't reviewed on the screen, you know, on like on my desktop, and it's just a long line of books we've got been sent through.
Yeah.
I'm working my way through, yeah.
There's a few issues that look like they're quite sort of meaty reads, so I want to take some time to sit down to enjoy them. Yeah, so thank you very much for everything that you send in, folks. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we'll announce our upcoming guests, our polls. Sometimes we'll give a live shout out to questions like we tried this week. And we got a question so good, we're going to talk about it. It needs to be a proper discussion next week. So there you go.
Yeah.
So we'll probably forget about it, and we're ever so sorry if we do. Go to the Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And thank you for listening to us, whether it is on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com, whether you listen to us on Stitcher or the Podnose Network, thank you very much. And if you listen to us on iTunes, please leave us a review. Those things help get the word out about the show. And the more people who listen to the show, the more people that will find out about these brilliant books and check out these courses and just spread the love of comics around everywhere. We're all about spreading love on this show.
And we're talking possibly, I'm going to say, crossover. That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
A possible one on the horizon.
There could be crossovers. Yeah. And before
versus.
Versus.
Yeah, much better.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
God.
Death matches, we like to
say. It'll be like Avengers versus X-Men. That's what it'll be. Now, before I sign off, I just want to announce our guest for next week. We had an episode a little while ago where we talked about our influences and some of the people that, you know, we love. And we've already had one of them on the show when we had Pat Mills, the brilliant Pat Mills on the show.
Yeah.
And we're getting another one of our influences on the show. And we're having the brilliant Jamie Smart from Bear, Moose Kid Comics, The Dandy, Phoenix. He's done so much. He's one of my favourite creators of all time. And I won't go all gushy over him. I'm going to compose myself. Yeah, I will. I'm going to compose myself. But he is seriously doing some great things for all ages comics right now. And I think he's a man that's got quite a lot of experience with self-publishing and getting the work out to a new audience. So let us know.
I'm glad you didn't go all gushy. Well done.
Yeah, thanks. But if you want to ask anything about all ages comics, if you've got any all ages comics, send us an email and find out about it, and we'll talk about it next week. We're actually going to try and do an all ages show. Well, the show won't be all ages, but
fuck off.
So you yeah,
it's about all ages book, but the show isn't for all ages.
Yeah, no, the show isn't for all ages. But I think if we have a comics for everyone show. We might just have to ban Tony from the episode. I think that's probably best. Yeah. No, he'll be back next week, as will the rest of us. Thank you for listening.
And the other thing, sorry, quickly, mate, just if you are at Bristol, come see us. We'll do a little interview with you.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes,
we haven't done a sort of convention special for a while, have we?
Yes. No, we haven't. We're looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing you. I won't hug you. Well, I probably will.
You probably will.
Well,
I'm looking forward to it.
I like physical contact.
You'll hold me just a little too long, like we did last time.
Oh,
so it becomes slightly uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, it's always slightly uncomfortable whenever we're in the same vicinity, Tony. Thank you
then
for listening.
Then you'll get out of the hotel bed.
God, damn it. I was hoping to sign out before Dan ruined it. thank you for listening. Thank you for listening, as you do every week, folks. Thank you for bearing with us. And from Michael, Dan, Tony, and myself. Oh, no, wait. I was too eager. Dan, where can people find us on Twitter, etc.? Tony.
Oh, here we go. Oh, Ezo, yes. E-Z-O-H-Y-Z. Or you can find me in the forums at lomaxmypd.org.
Dan, where can they find you?
On Twitter, it's at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Which is brilliant at the moment, and you really should.
Thank you.
You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic, The Red Mask, at theredmaskfrommars.com. And Michael, where can people find you on Twitter?
Okay, Michael Russell.
There you go. That's all you need to know. So thanks for listening. And from all of us here on the Awesome Comic Podcast, have a brilliant week. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
I've got a load of shit in the garage, old records and stuff like that, and I thought that would go down as a storm, but I can't be bothered to argue with people over prices. And nah.
So that's the price it is. There's no haggling.
Yeah, it's on my arse.
Yeah. Oh, dear God.
What? Why does my arse put you off? What's wrong with you?
It's just, I don't know. It's just like looking into the gateway of hell, isn't it, really?
Attractive. Although a girl at work did start the rumour I had a tail.